Hello and welcome to Choose a Phi. Today on the show, we have the Phi couple. So this should be a really interesting, an interesting journey of Phi in the sense that Ali and Josh found themselves in 2017, mired in debt and on the cusp of being married and trying to figure out where do we go from here? And 2017 was that mindset shift, but really in 2018, they got in gear with their finances. And since then, it has been a remarkable, remarkable journey. And it's the intersection of mindset, financial independence, and real estate, which I know many in our community are interested in diving into the real specifics. And boy, do they have it. So this should be a great one. With that, welcome to Choose FI. All right, Ali and Josh, welcome to Choose FI. So happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. We're super excited to be here today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real honor.
Yeah, this should be fun. So, okay, let's go back to the early days, the way back early days, 2017. Where were you as a couple and financially at that point?
Yeah, so we were getting married in 2018 and Ali was working on a master's program in the middle of 2017. So I was working full-time. I was a program manager for a small non-for-profit. I was working a lot of hours and we weren't really seeing each other a whole lot. And so it was right around that time, you know, going through the act of planning a wedding and figuring out how much that would cost. That's actually was kind of the first time we started talking about our financial situation. It wasn't ever something that we had ever really talked about before. We'd never really calculated how much debt we had from student loans, including the master's program that Ali was finishing. And so going through that process and starting to calculate that we had over $100,000 of debt with pretty low income jobs in the fields of social work, I would say that's where our money journey kind of began.
Yeah, that's interesting, Josh. So the first time we talked about money, I think that might actually be a really interesting thing to dive into because there are a lot of couples out there listening to this podcast who maybe they haven't ever talked about money. How did you broach that subject? It sounds like it was all kind of part and parcel of, okay, we're getting married. We're kind of realizing some things, but were there any real specifics that jumped out to you?
There was in the beginning truly nothing collaborative about this process. We knew we were getting married, but Josh was kind of the mad scientist behind the curtain, looking at the Excel sheets and figuring out the numbers. And I like vividly remember the conversation of him like a light sweat, total panic. We have so much debt. We're living paycheck to paycheck. We are totally financially screwed. And I remember his level of concern, but I didn't feel it. I was like, oh, like that sounds scary, but everyone has debt. And like, we did the thing. We went to school. I got a master's. That's what you're supposed to do. And I'm saying that with air quotes, right? But it's like, we did the thing. This is the reality. We're going to be just fine. And I feel like that was truly like, it's scary to acknowledge the reality. And I think there's some like naivety and like lack of real financial literacy on both of our parts. So it was tough in the beginning because we weren't on the same page when we first started having those conversations.
And we knew headed into our year of getting married, we wanted a lot more time together as newlyweds than how much time we were spending prior to getting married. And we also knew that, well, if we have over $100,000 of debt and we're both working all of the time, how in the world are we going to have more time together? And that became a real motivator for us.
Yeah, that debt can just hang there, right? As this albatross that sticks with you forever. And Ali, to your point, hey, we did everything right. We got master's degrees. We have these important jobs. They might be, unfortunately, in our society, low-paying jobs, but important jobs nevertheless. Mm-hmm. Where do we go from here? And I think that's something that a lot of us face, right? It's okay. We never learned. We've made these decisions, right? The decisions are in the past. You can't undo them.
Right.
And where do we go from here? So I want to touch on where do we go from here, obviously. But Josh, just real quick before we move on, Ali said, okay, you had all these spreadsheets, but having these spreadsheets and, oh, waking up to we have $100,000 of debt, like there's some incongruity there. I'm curious, like, what's the background on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent a lot of time in my former profession driving. And when I came to the conclusion, or I should say we came to the realization that we had well over $100,000 of debt just in student loans, not including credit cards, personal loans, car loans, I went to the internet of how to not have debt, as arbitrary or as simple as that was. And I'm really grateful that I did, because through the internet, I realized there's a lot of literature. There's this thing called a podcast, which 6 years ago, I had never really listened to a podcast. I had heard people talk about them, but I didn't really know what they were. And so it was really just a means of how can we not be in the situation we're in and how are other people doing it? And so through that process, that's actually how we discovered Dave Ramsey and the Total Money Makeover. That's how we discovered Choose FI and the community here. That's how we discovered Bigger Pockets. And no one in our real day-to-day life seemed to really care about these types of things or were even talking about them. So it was finding these communities and hearing other people who had paid off debt, gained financial freedom, things of that nature, that I started applying what I was learning through those podcasts and listening to shows like this to our own life.
I also want to say, though, just to address the incongruency, I feel like for most of our 20s, we were kind of like bumbling along. Overdraft fees and rolling negative car equity was like a thing that was happening. We were making uneducated financial decisions because we didn't know better. But I think that Josh did so much research and I wasn't even aware you were doing it. So by the time he got to Excel sheet and having the conversation with Allie, he had better equipped himself to have more knowledge and have that conversation.
No, understood. So Josh, that first conversation that you had, this is a critical, critical thing because you clearly have been educating yourself for many, many hours. Allie was slightly unaware at that point that there might even be a problem because honestly, Allie, there's nothing wrong with that. It's everybody has debt. That's what we are conditioned to believe. This is just a standard operating procedure of life. So again, you did everything right. Of course, why would anything be wrong? So there still is a bridge from here to there in terms of, hey, before we even make changes, we've got to get on the same page, especially with a wedding impending, right? So talk me through those early conversations. I don't imagine it was like unicorns and rainbows from the first second, right?
I think something too to note, Josh and I met in college. We got degrees in child and family studies. And something that like I vividly remember our professors telling us, you're not in this field to make money. You're probably not going to make money in life. So I feel like my schema and my mindset was, I'm going to live a very average life. I'm not going to make a high salary. I'm going to do my best. And like, I was kind of complacent with that. Like, that's just what my next 40 years look like. And there's no ability to get off that train. And that's really what I believe. So I think when Josh started talking about all this stuff, I genuinely thought he had lost his mind. I'm like, do you know who we are? We are social workers. We are not rich. We are not investors. Like that life is not accessible to us. It seemed like such a crazy, foreign, outlandish idea that I completely shut you down. I thought you were like ruining my life, essentially. And that sounds dramatic, wow. But it was very combative. And I think a big piece of that too was how maybe Josh presented it in the beginning. Do you want to go into that?
Let's hear it, Josh. Come on.
Well, because I think, so I was like fully down the rabbit hole at that point. I'm listening to Brad
and Jonathan. You drank the Kool-Aid.
I'm listening to Brad and Jonathan every single day. I have Scott Trench in the other every single day. Mad Scientist. I am all in. I have my Excel sheets. I'm ready to go. And I come to Allie with all of the Excel sheets, all of the plan, the debt payoff, etc., expecting her to just say, yes, Josh, this is a masterful plan. Why, yes, we're going to sell our car. We're going to leave our beautiful apartment. We're going to radically overturn our life the year before we get married because all of this sounds logical. And it couldn't have been farther from the truth.
And he was like showing me the numbers in the Excel sheet and like, if we do this, then this and this. And it just, I don't know. I wasn't a numbers driven person at the time. So it didn't resonate with me. And I feel like it was months of like, we're not really getting along on this topic. And then January of 2018 hits. And the first 2 weeks of that month, Josh totaled one of our cars and got laid off from that long-term employer of 7 years. Wow. So this is the year of our wedding. And we're like, okay, like our world is crumbling around us. And also a pivotal lesson from that was we had these two really stable jobs. And then overnight, one disappeared. How are we going to pay our bills and survive? And that was terrifying. And I think through that like chaos and trauma, it actually helped align us actually, because we both realized like what we're doing isn't working. We are spending more than we earn. We're not in a good situation. And you realized how terrifying it is to solely rely just on a single stream of income.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. I can feel the emotion even 5+ years later now. It's just imagining being in that spot. And that's what we're always talking about here, right? Is just the amount of stress that money causes for people. And understandably, right? None of us get any type of financial education. We're mostly living paycheck to paycheck. This is American life. And it can be so much better. And I think that to me is why I want to just stand on every rooftop and yell about the beauty of FI, is because of the way that it can transform your life, truly. And sometimes, like in your case, it takes that crazy exogenous shock that, okay, we have nothing to do but to wake up and realize, hey, maybe this professor told me, oh, you're going to be poor forever, essentially, right? Reading between the lines. And you just kind of go with it. But it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that's what's so beautiful about your story, is we're talking literally 60 months and your lives have been dramatically transformed. And of course, we'll get there. But I wanted to go to that instability, right? Of, hey, we're stable. We're maybe paycheck to paycheck. It sounds like you may not have even been quite there necessarily. But then Josh gets laid off. And then, oh no, the stuff is hitting the fan. What do we do? Right? Like, what does that look like in that first month, that January of 2018? Because, man, that's a real wake-up moment.
Oh, absolutely. And it was almost kind of fortuitous timing to some extent, because just prior to that, we were kind of envisioning, you know, 2018, this is going to be our year. We came up with our New Year's resolutions. But actually, something that we had learned from Choose FI, you guys had a great episode with our friend Andy Hill, and Andy had shared how he had a similar initial outcome when he spoke to his wife about all the Excel sheets and financial independence, and it didn't go all too well. It was when he learned how to speak Nicole's money language, sometimes we refer to it, and speaking not so much in dollars and cents, but in terms of values. And so right prior to me crashing my car and getting fired, Allie and I had a really long conversation, not about money and debt and stuff like that, but what are the five things that are most important to us? What are the things that we both value above all? And we made a list, and then we compared those lists, and not so surprisingly, time together, time with family, and the ability to travel and see new places were our top three. And yet the lifestyle that we were living, the debt that we had, the beyond paycheck to paycheck expenses that we had, it would have prohibited us from ever being able to truly lean into those things that we love until much, much later in life. And so I got fired very unexpectedly from that long-term employer, but I was kind of like I always joke, like the coyote who runs off the cliff, but his legs are still going. Like, I was like, I don't necessarily know what's next for me, but I'm really liking the momentum that I'm getting from these podcasts. So the first thing that I did was I downloaded the Uber app, because I knew I needed to make some level of money. And it was the fastest way for me to make money, because we had a wedding in 7 months. And from there, Allie was now working full time in a job. And when I wasn't transporting people via Uber, I was listening to Bigger Pockets and Choose FI. And I was listening to these stories. And again, 5 years ago, it seemed completely far-fetched that I would ever be, or we would ever be, on the other side of that microphone. But I just kept listening and listening and listening and kind of control what I could control. And that was kind of the next step.
Yeah. And certainly control what you can control is doing something that you may not have thought you'd ever do before, right? It's drive for Uber. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's a wonderful way to make money. But okay, this is a very immediate way to do it.
Right.
And I love that you took action, because that really is what separates people. In essence, you can be debilitated, or frankly, you could just sit and listen to podcasts all day and not do anything and be the most educated person in the world. But without the action, it's all essentially worthless. So kudos to you. And Ali, I wanted to just go back to that, the five things you value. Mm-hmm. Let's start first with, in your mind's eye, was that an inflection point, or was there something else around that time that coincided?
So I think having that conversation about our top values was pivotal, but there was a conversation that even preceded that. Prior to getting on the same page with our values and before Josh got laid off, we had that same conversation while he was still working. What are our top three values? And they were not the same. My number one value was time with people that I love, and Josh's number one value was his career. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with how either of us viewed life, but it wasn't aligned. And I remember feeling panic when we had that conversation. Like, this isn't going to work if our top value is not the same because we're building something together. And I felt really scared about that. But it felt like an impossible problem. Like, how do you change someone's value system? And then fast forward, he got fired. We continued these conversations. We had 3 weeks of uninterrupted time. Josh was driving me to and from my job because we only had one car. And I remember at the conclusion of those 3 weeks, we had had so many great conversations. And Josh had said, like, I actually think time with you and time with people I love is more important to me than a career, because for years I've been building someone else's dream, and very quickly it just all went away. And those coworkers that felt like family aren't even talking to me anymore. And I think that was what was necessary to get us on the same page. So, like, it was all so crazy, but in the end, that helped align us. Like, yeah, us above anything else, like us above work, us above all the other BS, time with people that we love was most critical. And I think that was like the really pivotal thing that continued us on the FI journey and gave me buy-in for all of it.
Yeah. Wow. So that actually makes, there's so much interesting stuff here, right? That makes this story even more poignant in the sense that, Josh, in your mind's eye, you just recollected the happy side of it, which is obviously wonderful 60 plus months later, that's the memory. But before this crazy shock, it was that career. And Ali, I can imagine your panic, right? So we're in January of 2018. You have a wedding coming up late summer, early fall of that year. And your husband-to-be is saying career is his number one priority, right? And in fairness, because this is not pick on Josh Day by any means, in fairness, career is very important. And there's no, like, our community is not the anti-job community. That is not what we are at all. But we're the, in essence, the congruity with your life. And what do you actually want your life to be? And I think picking a career is perfectly fine. It really is, especially when you have a career like yours that's actually truly adding value to the world. So there's nothing wrong with that. But that hard work that you guys did, again, you almost had the good fortune of Josh being laid off.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I think the critical piece to consider here is that there's nothing wrong if career is your number one priority, but when you are combining your life with another person who had a different upbringing and different beliefs and all of those things, you better be aligned on some fundamental topics. And ultimately, Josh and I were not. And it was a happy accident through all of that unexpected stuff that we couldn't have predicted that we got aligned. Because if I was totally focused on my career, and so was he, and we were okay with that, or I was okay with him having careers number one, that's fine. But I was looking at a person across from me that I was about to marry, and I said, I don't want your job to be number one. I want our family to be number one, and that's not the life I want. And if that priority hadn't shifted, I don't know if we would have lasted. Like, we would have had to really have a lot of conversations to reconcile that. So I think for anyone listening, like couple, single, these are the conversations that are so critical to have, ideally before you get married. But if you are coupled up with someone already, just having those conversations about what you want your life to look like, because it felt like we were driving in opposite directions and that's why we weren't making progress to our goals. But once we aligned them, we were supercharged. We were able to accomplish so much more because we had the same vision, but it didn't happen overnight and it definitely wasn't easy.
No, it certainly, I cannot imagine that it was easy in any way. And so just last question on this, because I think this is something that people are going to take a lot away from, because you guys were quite divergent on this. And then in a very short time, again, with this outside shock, which that clearly is an integral part of it. But that said, just like when we talk with Dominic Cortuccio about we don't desire these crazy shocks in order to make positive change, right? So how would you advise the Ali and Josh, and the many thousands of Ali and Josh's who are listening to this, who maybe aren't going to have that shock? Maybe they're not on the same page. You obviously, taking the shock out, you still had those deep conversations. What helped you get there?
I would say for a couple starting out, you obviously don't need to have a total chaos trauma happen in order to get on the same page. But the biggest thing is open and non-judgmental communication, like respecting that we are both people that have different opinions and I love and respect you, but let's talk about like what we want life to look like. So the value conversation is so critical. I would say outlining your top 3 to 5 values of areas in your life that are most important to you and then creating, what do I see the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years looking like? What do I want that life to look like? Do I want to climb the corporate ladder? Do I want to retire and move to Hawaii? Like, what do I want life to look like? Do we want children? Do we not want children? Do we want to buy a home? All of those things. And then an exercise that we really like is the perfect day exercise. So if you could describe your perfect day, what would it be? And I think when we did our perfect day, again, they were really different. But I think those exercises give you really good insight into your partner in a lot of ways. Do you have anything you would add?
No, I think I would agree with all of that. Yeah, we were thrust into having those conversations, and I'm really glad that it all happened the way it did. But anytime an individual or couple can have those conversations proactively, it's just a great learning activity in general to learn about ourselves. Because I think sometimes, especially as we get older and life gets busy, we kind of are just on autopilot to some extent. And it's very easy to get disconnected from the things that mean the most to us, especially when we're working a lot and we're trying to pay off debt and just have a life. So those conversations, I think, are integral.
Yeah. Thank you both for spending so much time on that. I think that's going to be a huge takeaway for people, because this is, we talk about this all the time, right? In our community of, once you get the money stuff right, that's the easy part of the journey. This is the real stuff, that getting on the same page with your spouse or partner, it's critical. So yeah, again, thank you. And obviously the punchline of your story here is 5 years later, you've paid off this debt. You have a rental portfolio of 10 plus units. You're not working 9-to-5 jobs, but obviously we're still in January of 2018 with an impending wedding, one job with an Uber driver, and $100,000 of debt. Like, what do you do from there? Because there has to be some big thing that occurred, I would imagine, in that first handful of months that maybe put you on this trajectory.
So Cliff Notes version, Josh panic accepted a job that was half of his current salary 3 weeks later, because it was like, we need income. Went into the job, worked it for a few months, and was totally miserable, not happy in what he was doing. And we were struggling financially because it was a huge pay cut. So I remember June of 2018, he was like, I can go off on my own and start a consulting business. I'm going to make $0, but I have the potential to make more than that. And we took a chance on Josh. And, you know, we both believed that he was capable of more. So he did that. At the same time, we had committed to the idea of house hacking. We're going to buy a duplex. We're going to live in half. And then the tenant's rent every month is going to offset a huge cost of our mortgage. So instead of going on a honeymoon after our wedding, we scraped together every dollar we had to buy a 130-year-old duplex to reduce our cost of living. So I think taking risks on ourselves in terms of income to get a higher income potential, but then also learning the fundamentals of investing that allowed us to reduce our cost of living. So that classic, how can we increase our income? How can we decrease our expenses? We kind of worked both sides of that equation over that next year and few months.
Nice. Yeah. The funny thing is, it's a simple equation at its essence, right? But that doesn't mean the life aspect of it is simple or easy to get there. And Josh, I think I want to talk about that kind of flash accepting that job and your mindset on that, because I think that might be a way to highlight one of the benefits of FI, which we always talk about. It's, you have autonomy and agency in your life, that it's not about being at FI or not FI. It's not like a binary 0 or 1, right? It's any aspect along this journey, and you clearly weren't there yet by any means, but any way down the path to FI gives you more of that power, right? We call it eventually having FU money, which is, you know, freedom unlimited money, as Jonathan liked to say. But what it means is, you're not beholden to somebody. You're not beholden to a job. Your life isn't going to fall apart in 60 or 90 days. But frankly, you were at that point where, hey, I have to do what I have to do for my here to be new family, right? So A, that's very admirable, obviously. But B, talk me through your mindset, because that couldn't have been pleasant.
No. Well, I had built in my prior career a rather large reputation for the work that I did. And as I worked in it longer, I had a lot of conversations with people who said, hey, just so you know, we love working with the organization you're a part of. If you were to ever work for yourself and do this, then we would happily work with you. We just so happen to work with this organization because you're there. And it was always flattering, but that financial situation that we were in prohibited me from ever even thinking about the idea of doing the work that I enjoyed and doing it for myself. Obviously, got laid off and no longer did that have to be something I weighed. And so, yeah, I took that job and I was still driving Uber too. So now I was driving for Uber and working a full-time job at a much lower income. But I was listening to podcasts of people who it was entrepreneurship that actually helped accelerate their goal of paying off debt or buying real estate, et cetera. And I really had that itch to take a chance on myself. And I'm really grateful that Allie was confident enough in me to say, basically, hey, you know what? We're getting married in 3 months or 4 months. Let's take a chance on this. If you get traction, fantastic. And if you don't, after we get married, we have to find you a full-time job again. And so we took a chance on me and I continued to drive Uber. But then I'd already had kind of a repertoire of people who were willing to work with me. I just had to figure out kind of the mechanics of how do I actually work with them, but not through an organization. And that was a really cool learning opportunity.
Yeah. So it sounds like this was a couple of years of learning for you. And before the outside shock, you had already started learning. And now it's, okay, the rubber hits the road here. This is supercharged. We got to figure this out. Were there any resources for that specifically? Because we certainly have a lot of budding entrepreneurs in the audience. Did anything jump out to you? Because it sounds good. Oh, I'm going to start a business. But as you know, and as you just alluded to, there are a lot of I's to dot, T's to cross. And it's a little scary. Also, how do I work with Josh, the person, as opposed to this company that I've been working with? I know this is probably something we could spend 2 hours on separately. So I may be kind of setting you up for failure here. But does anything jump out, even just in a minute or two, that really helped you that you could at least point somebody to?
There isn't necessarily like a single book or podcast episode that stands out in terms of what it was. But I think really it was like the culmination of listening to hundreds and hundreds of guests on different podcasts and reading different books and consuming a lot of content and hearing those people share those stories of how taking a chance on themselves and maybe increasing their earning potential a little bit, coupled with improving their money management systems, really became like a big catalyst for them in terms of their pursuit of financial independence. And so hearing it over and over again kind of normalized it for me a little bit. And then I'm kind of grateful for my former career because it was kind of like an entrepreneur kind of opportunity where I was within an organization, but I was already pretty much accustomed to working by myself and having a lot of autonomy. So that kind of made that transition into self-employment much simpler.
I think something I would add to just for like people looking to get started in entrepreneurship in general, at this point, we've started numerous businesses. Josh started his consulting business. We started the Phi Couple, a social media business. And then we also have our real estate portfolio. So my biggest takeaway is what is a skill that you have or a story that you have that you can monetize and build a business around? Or what are other conventional ways that people build businesses and find success? With real estate, we weren't reinventing the wheel. We're not doing anything unique. Millions of people have done it before us and millions will do it after us. So it's kind of either saying like, what is a unique offering that I can provide to folks? Or what is something that is time-tested and evidence-based? We're not looking for like the needle in the haystack situation. We were like, what's easily replicatable? And we could probably figure it out. And that's kind of where we landed.
And isn't that the beautiful part, right? It doesn't have to be needle in the haystack. You don't need to be Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. You just, like you said, this is time tested, especially with real estate. It is quite time tested and it simply works. So what you're talking about there is really the value of stories, right? And if they can do it, why not me? And when you hear all of these successful people who are just regular people, all these people on different podcasts and reading articles and such, if they can do it, why not me? And that to me, it's so important because we see ourselves in these stories that we hear about. It's not about, to Ali's point, like it's not about this needle in a haystack. It's not about hitting a home run. It's not about finding some specialized knowledge and the tax code that's going to change everything. It doesn't work that way. This is ultimately, it's get rich slowly, but it's get rich reliably because it works. It's that simple equation, Ali, you mentioned before, right? You're going to increase your income. You're going to lower your expenses. Boom, voila. 10 to 15 years later for most people, you're going to most likely hit financial independence, which is pretty amazing because for most people, they're going to wake up 10 or 15 years later and still be living paycheck to paycheck. So if you can transform your life, is it going to happen in a year or two for most people? No, of course. That's not possible without a home run. But is it possible over 5, 10, 15, 20 years for most people? I genuinely think it is. So I do want to talk about this time-tested real estate thing. So this is, a real important aspect of your story and something I'm fascinated by. Okay, Ali, you said before, house hacking. We scraped together the money. No honeymoon. Clearly, there's some stories here, right? So this is the first, that duplex, the 100-plus-year-old duplex. I want to hear about that very first house hack because I assume, unless I'm getting the timeline wrong, this is all part and parcel of, okay, Josh just got laid off. Where you've got $100,000 of debt, you still have a W-2 income, right? So you could theoretically have gotten a mortgage or get a mortgage, et cetera. I don't know if there's a mortgage part of this or if scraped together, go essentially. I don't know where the story goes from here.
So we started looking at properties, I'd say in the spring of 2018, Josh was working his W-2. This is before he went out on his own. I was working my W-2. We probably put in half a dozen offers and every single offer got rejected. We were also going into areas where like there were literal prayer vigil candles on the outside of the houses because murders had recently occurred there. And I was like, I can't live here. This isn't safe. And Josh was like, yeah, but the numbers are so good. This is in cash flow like oh, crazy Josh. Now. So we've had a lot of self-growth, both of us. But I remember like having the conversation, like we need to stop looking for properties before our wedding, because if we don't, like there may not be a wedding. And, you know, I'm a little dramatic. So anyway, like it just was not great. And we were feeling really discouraged because we were tiny little fish in a big ocean. So after the wedding, we said, yeah, we're definitely not going on a honeymoon. We're saving all the money we have to buy this house hack whenever we find it. And we actually found a rental that was off market, meaning it wasn't listed on the MLS. We had no other competition. It was another couple that was house hacking, and they had one young child and another on the way. And they had a unique set of circumstances. They needed an extended closing window. So instead of closing in the traditional maybe 45-day window, they needed 3+ months. So we said, hey, we can solve that problem for you. Take as long as you need. Please just sell us your house. So we were able to get a 5% down conventional loan on that property. And we ended up closing in the last week of December of 2018. Do you want to walk through the numbers of it?
Yeah, no, and something you talk a lot about, Brad, is like the aggregation of marginal gains. And 2018 kind of, not just 2018, but in general, kind of epitomized that was controlling what we could control, listening to podcasts every single day, seeing ourselves learning, iterating, things like that. So when we finally found this opportunity, it was also understanding what success looks like for us. Because I think sometimes like I was listening to all of these like Bigger Pockets podcasts and these single guys living in these basements behind a curtain like Craig Kurlop and trying to apply that framework to a newlywed couple just wasn't applicable. So that was also a really good growth opportunity for me. But yeah, we found it. We put 5% down. We didn't actually have enough to close on it. So we actually used what's called a seller concession, where sometimes the seller of the property, you can add a little bit to the mortgage so that you can preserve some of your cash so that you can not only buy it, but still have some cash in the bank, which is really important. I actually, when I got fired, I had some 401k money that I never rolled over. And so I paid some penalty on that and I actually took some out and that helped with it too. We were going all in on this. So we closed the week before the end of the year, and we had been paying about $1,300 a month for a one bedroom, one bath luxury apartment. And we went from that, and now we were paying about $625 per month because the upstairs unit was already rented to someone who was paying $725 a month. And I think the mortgage on that time was just under $1,400. It was like $1,360. And for the first time, we felt like we had financial breathing room.
Wow. Yeah, that is incredibly cool. That's the beauty of house hacking. It's such an amazing thing. And I know, I'm not sure if that was Scott Trench with the living behind a curtain, but it sounds vaguely like his story. And I guess, sure, it sounds great for the 23-year-old guy who can do that. But for most of us, that's not going to be palatable. So, okay, can you find this duplex where we actually want to live? And is it going to cut our living expenses down to zero? For most of us, not. But was it able, in your case, to cut it in half or thereabouts? That's amazing.
It cut it radically in half, right? So the cost of living just for housing alone was cut in half. And then that tenant ended up leaving and the rent was well below market. So we did some improvement. We raised rent. Then we're living for about like 400, 300 housing costs. And then fast forward to 2020, we actually decided to house hack again. We used a 3.5% down FHA loan. And at that point, we reached our live for free goal, where the cash flow from property one covered any extra costs at property two. And that was really big for us as well.
And along the way, Allie had a very nice luxury car, or it felt luxury at the time.
It was a Volkswagen Passat. It wasn't exactly luxury, but it was very fancy for us.
But we ended up actually selling that, and we got a used 2011 Toyota Corolla with a cigarette burn in the seat, because you have to have a house hack and a Corolla. But now all of a sudden, it took about 2 years to get our housing costs down to zero and our car payment down to zero, which equated to, prior to that, we were spending almost $1,500 a month of after-tax income. And as two people from human services backgrounds, even with full-time careers, because now at that point, I'm working full-time in my consulting business, I was still driving for Uber. Allie was working full-time, and she, I think you had like a side hustle or two going at the same time.
I had a few, yeah.
So we were doing everything that we could, but high income earning potential still wasn't there. So we decided to double down on the expenses side of the equation. And all of a sudden, we had anywhere between $12,000 to $15,000 a year of after-tax income. And that kind of became like what we talk about is like spoon versus shovel. So instead of like focusing on how can we save like $10 or $30, is how can we save thousands of dollars? And it was using that shovel of $15,000 to $20,000 a year of after-tax income we were now saving to dig ourselves out of $100,000 of student loan debt.
Yeah, that is great. And I love that, the spoon versus shovel. I think that's really important, because as you two certainly know, our community, at least as we conceptualize it, and we've tried very, very hard to shift the narrative, our community is not about deprivation.
Right.
It's about living a good life, right? And that's what we're trying to do here. So to focus on the brown bananas and the cutting lattes, can that help in a short term, the lattes? Yeah, I guess, but that's not what we're after here. We're after the shovel type stuff. And for you two, you're able to save, for most people, housing and car, that's 50% of your budget. And yours just went to zero from just a couple of smart decisions. I mean, that's really remarkable. So, okay, it sounds like, is that four units now and you're living in one? The other three are paying for the two mortgages. Is that where we are at this point?
Exactly. That's where we were by 2020. Yes.
Okay.
And then Allie, she had changed employers, so she got a pay raise in that regards. So now our income is steadily growing as our cost of living is steadily going down further and further. So that gap that is so often talked about, that really became our focus of how do we pay off this debt as fast as we can? And that's really where momentum started picking up.
Yeah, that's amazing. So right, Allie, you talked so eloquently before about just the real simple nature of this, right? Raise your income, lower your expenses. Your expenses cratered at this point. Mm-hmm. And now Josh has a little bit of space to build his consulting firm. Your expenses have gone down. Your income's going up. And this is the prototypical pie story. That's wild. So I want to keep going, but let's just hit pause for 1 second and talk about something you said in there that I caught, which was off market.
Mm.
So that my spidey senses tingled a little bit there, because there's something there, because there are a lot of fledgling real estate investors listening to this. How did you find that? How did you have conversations with the seller? Talk to me about that, because I think most of us either go to MLS or Zillow or something and just, oh, these are the 7 houses for sale in my neighborhood. And that's all there is. I got no other option. So talk me through all of this.
Yeah. So for us, we were not so different early on. We tried the Redfin and the Zillow, and we very quickly got beat out every single time by 12 or 15 offers. I remember one night we were sitting in the grocery store and our agent called us and said, hey, you guys put in the very first offer. Great job. 12 other offers came in. You're not even close. And we cried in the middle of the grocery store. This is before we bought our first ever rental.
We're very dramatic.
Yeah. Well, no, because at that point too, it was just feeling really bleak. I'm like, I'm listening to these people talk about it. Is this ever going to happen? So we stopped trying to play other people's games, and we started using skills that we had developed in our career of human services, which, how can we find solutions to problems people have? And sometimes, can we make unique solutions?
So we had found an amazing realtor, and the realtor actually was the one that connected us to that first off-market deal. And when he connected us to it, we didn't even know that off-market deals existed. I thought you could only get real estate on the MLS. So that kind of opened up this mindset and doorway of maybe we can buy real estate and not have the competition. So the first one was really a blessing by finding the right realtor who knew the right person at the right time. But since then, every other property we purchased has also been off market because we don't even want to mess with the MLS anymore because the competition is so, so intense. In fact, we're actually under contract for our first single family home, and we found it on the MLS and we made an offer, and it was truly like a nightmare of a week. And I was so triggered. I was like, I'm right back to 2018, Allie, where we were, you know, crying in the grocery store and having, you know, conversations about we'll never get this house. But buying off market has been our weapon to finding real estate because we never had a lot of money. We were not mega investors. We weren't like sexy buyers in any way. So that was the main strategy that we used to grow our real estate portfolio.
And so we learned how to network. We learned how to connect with people. But most of all, we learned how to solve problems. The property that we acquired in 2020 off market, it was five houses down from our very first property. And we had met the owner or former owner at a local meetup, connected with them. And then just through an organic conversation, they had expressed some pain points that they were experiencing in their own life, that they were considering maybe selling this property as a way to help alleviate some of those pain points. And through those conversations, as well as just kind of explaining our situation, they would always walk past our old home and see us working on it. And so it kind of showed some validity there. We realized that we probably had a pain point we could help them solve, meaning they needed to sell off market and they needed to sell quickly. And so in 2020, it was the same idea. Fantastic. Sell it to us. We don't have to have agents, which means we had to actually learn all the paperwork that goes into a real estate transaction, but it saved them money in the process, which they really liked because they needed the money. And so we were able to solve a problem. So now every property that we buy subsequent has been not focusing on the real estate. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost. They focus on the real estate, not the real person behind the property. And as long as you focus on solving problems for people, you'll always do well for yourself long term.
Yeah, Josh, haven't you just described the secret to success in life, right? not just real estate. Learn how to solve problems. Talk to people. Be a nice human being. Yeah. Look for pain points. Use your skills, as you both said, right? In your case, it was social work. It was, you have obviously a repertoire of skills with how to help people. And none of this, obviously, and it doesn't come across this way for one second, none of this was like some Machiavellian plan to get more rentals. This was genuine human connection. And you found this, I guess, neighbor or owner of a rental property who happened to be a neighbor. And you probably talked with this person a handful, dozens of times. And there's a pain point here. Okay, so that's the 2021. So now you're up to four rentals. And it sounds like you have at least 10 right now. But Ali, you said something to the effect of a single family. Is this for your home or is this a single family rental?
No. Yeah, we're actually under contract for our first ever single family, our home. I'm mildly terrified and excited at the same time. It's hard to go from like living completely for free in a house hack to taking on a mortgage. But everything we've done throughout this entire journey has been very metrics driven and intentional, and this decision is no different. So it's an exciting step for us.
Something that we had made a goal one day, we didn't know how long it would take, but one day we are going to have a single family home, especially as we're in the family planning process. We want to have that home for our family, but we want to continue to work towards our goal of total financial independence. And so we wanted to have enough rental properties in place so that the net income from those properties would cover that payment on a single family home, giving us a net out-of-pocket housing expense at zero still, which then allows us to perpetuate everything we've been doing of investing that money in more real estate, index funds, things like that. So that was something really important to us.
Yeah, I like that. So there's also, again, how much of FI is psychological?
Yeah.
What you just described, obviously you guys are doing great. You have all these rentals. You've paid off your debt, but yet you still actually had that conversation of, hey, we still want to live for free, even though money's fungible, right? At its essence. But yet, and I'm not, obviously, you know, you can tell I'm not talking down at all. This is wonderful, but this is how our brains work.
Right.
Okay, I want the rental income, the excess rental income from this other to pay for our single family. That's cool. If that helps you sleep at night, if that's a way to help you make the decision, right? Because a lot of people get paralyzed in these, this is how we've always done it, or we have to optimize. We're in the FI community. Life is not about optimization all the time. It's not. And this is a natural evolution of FI and your own journey. And this is, I see this in almost everybody. It evolves.
Yeah.
It's actually so funny that you're saying this, because this has been a very top of mind conversation for us. Because, okay, before we start, we have dreams of fancy houses and cars and white picket fence and 2.5 kids. And that's my mindset, right? Then we get into FI and it's like, we wore ourselves so down. Like, we are so super frugal. We're cutting everything.
Rice and beans.
We're, you know, living for so little, all of these things. And I think that season of hustle was so necessary, reducing our expenses as much as we can within reason. We want it to be sustainable here. Increasing our income as much as we can without burning ourselves out and getting into the whole hustle culture mentality. So there's nuances here. But we did that. We paid off the $100,000 of debt. We don't have any consumer debt. We're closing on 4 more units next week. So we're going to have 11 units. So we've done all of these things. We've scaled the FI couple to a full-fledged business that allowed us to both go to part-time work. So we did all of these things, but we're maintaining like an 80% savings rate.
A little bit higher
roughly,
than that.
Higher right than that, right? So
Excel sheets for the win, Josh. I like it.
So that's amazing. But the reality is, I'm pregnant with our first baby. This apartment is super small. Our quality of life is not going to be great here with that child. So we made the choice, like, let's find a modest single family home. I'm in a part-time job that's 2 days a week. And next year, they want me to go to 3 days a week. And we can't afford to do that with our business. So we're losing health benefits. So very quickly, our expenses are ballooning, like triple. And the anxiety that caused when we were thinking about that, it was significant. But then it's like, that's what happens in life. And we're doing it intentionally. We're not doing it like, man, lifestyle inflation, this is crazy. Look at all these expenses. It's like, we've made room for this. We brought our expenses down so low, and now we can intentionally bring it up to what makes sense for us, because that is life. As you're saying, it's not always that, you know.
There was a concept, I don't necessarily know if we prescribe to minimalism per se, but there was that notion of, let's remove as much from your life, kind of re-cement ourselves as like the gatekeepers of our life. And now we're going to revisit everything that was once in our life. Does it align with our newly found, newly cemented values? And if so, let's reintegrate that back into our lives. And so now there's these new expenses and new things that we've kind of gone without to some extent that we're intentionally reintegrating into our life because they directly align with the values. And we now have the financial flexibility to do so with confidence.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I love it. And new expenses, obviously, with the baby. So congrats, first off. That's incredible. That's really wonderful. I saw you announce it on, I think it was on Twitter. I obviously follow you guys there. So Ali, I wanted to just touch on something real quick. So we wore ourselves down. And you said, but yet that season of hustle was so necessary. And I think that's just so beautifully poignant, because it's true. In your case, that season of hustle was so necessary. And it doesn't mean because now you're on the other side of it, oh, that was a bad time or a bleak time, or we shouldn't have done that. No, of course not. You needed to do that in your case. And I think what all of us are trying to do here by sharing your story, by talking about FI, by sharing tons of stories like this are, how can we get that next couple to this point where maybe they can make decisions before they have to wear themselves down and before they have to cut back? So life is about choices, clearly. There's no two ways about it. FI is about making choices to make your life better. And in most cases, the low-hanging fruit is on the expense side. It just is. It doesn't mean you're depriving yourself. It doesn't mean your life is terrible. But if you're talking just real simple, what's the easiest way to make changes? In most cases, for most people, it's on that expense side. So now you're on the other side of that. And now, Ali, it sounds like you have to work 3 days a week next year. well, I don't think that's going to work for me, is what it sounds like. So again, I'm kind of reading between the lines, but what it sounded like is, hey, I'm going to have to leave. And now we have to get health insurance on our own, et cetera, et cetera. First, am I right with, did I interpret that correctly?
You interpreted it perfectly. And thinking about all the things that have happened to us and for us, I could get emotional thinking about it, because you go a little backwards, and I was at a full-time school social work career. I'm thinking I'm going to work here for the next 30 years. And then we're trying to get pregnant and we're struggling with infertility. And I'm putting kids in physical holds and getting punched and kicked in the stomach as we're going through fertility treatments. And my like physical and mental health was at an all-time low. I was really struggling. And at this point, like, our debt wasn't fully paid off. We weren't FI, but we were in such a better position and our expenses were so low. We were able to look at each other and say, this wasn't the plan. The plan was I was going to leave my job when the debt was paid off. But like, my health is above all of this right now. And we don't reach our goals if I'm not good, if either of us aren't good. So because of everything we did, I was able to leave that job. And then I found the part-time job that actually had like full coverage for IVF, which was incredible. So we got the health insurance. I was able to take a huge pay cut because the money at that point didn't matter because we had developed the multiple streams of income. We had reduced our cost of living. So now again, we're in this position where, hey, we need you to go up 3 days a week. And if our finances were not rock solid and we didn't do everything we needed to do, I would have been forced to say like, yeah, I have to do 3 days a week, which still is not a lot of work, but it's more than we have capacity with our businesses. And we're able to say, yeah, we're going to take a $2,000 healthcare bill every month on the chin because it makes sense to our budget and our money. And this is what works for us. And the fact that I'm even saying this to you, like if Allie from 2018 heard me talking right now, she'd be like, who is that girl? Like what's happening? So it's just the amount of change that can happen in just a few years. If like you work on your own or with a team, a partner, it's really, really profound if you stay consistent towards your goals.
Yeah, Allie, that is beautiful. I think your story is amazing. I love chatting with you both. I think it's incredible. It's just hard to believe. I mean, we're talking 60 months, how your lives can be dramatically transformed. And it's been an amazing journey for you two together. And obviously, you have this baby to make you three here in just a few short months. And I'm just so happy for you. So first, it's been amazing to meet you. And second, let the audience know where they can find you. I know you're pretty prolific online, so I'd love to hear about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you can find us through our website, thefycouple.com. And we're pretty much on any social media platform you can think of at the FI couple. FI stands for financial independence.
Is that what it stands for?
Well, actually, funny story. Many people think that it stands for the Florida couple. So I actually always do have to clarify. We definitely weren't financially independent when we started that page, but it was always the aspiration. And a few years, we were really able to get there. And it's incredible to say that. It's really full circle to even be on this podcast right now.
Nice. Well, again, wonderful to meet you. Thank you both so much. And thefycouple.com and everywhere on social, The Fi Couple. Josh and Allie, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show and for being part of the Choose FI community. If you haven't already, the best ways to get involved are, first, subscribe to the podcast. So you're listening to this on a podcast player, just hit subscribe. And then subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I actually sit down every Monday and write this by hand, and I send it out Tuesday morning. So just head over to choosefi.com/subscribe. And it's really, really easy to get on the newsletter list right there. And I would greatly appreciate it. It's the best way to get in touch with me. You can actually just hit reply to any of those emails and it comes directly to my inbox. So that's the way that I keep a pulse of the community and how we keep this the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. And finally, if you're looking to join an in real life community, we have Choose FI local groups in 300 plus cities all around the world. So head to choosefi.com/local and you'll find a list of all of those cities in 20 plus countries all across the world. And if you're just getting started with FI, or you have a family member or a friend who you think would be interested, two easy ways. Choose a FI episode 100 is kind of our welcome to the FI community. And even though it's a couple years old at this point, it still stands up. And it's a really great just starting point to get an understanding of what is financial independence? What are we doing here? Why are we looking to live a more intentional life where we save money and use it as a springboard to live a better life. And then Choosify created a Financial Independence 101 course that's entirely free. Just head to choosify.com/FI101. And again, thanks for listening.